south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's start today with a little story. And after you hear it, you can only wish something like this just might happen in the U.S. But it never will, and you'll know why after hearing this. It's a newsflash out of Ecuador, a place I don't recommend for a plan B. It's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. However, it does have some very positive things going for it. Not enough for me to put it on my plan B list, but for some people, maybe it is. And I'll translate. The title of this article is, When is Indigenous Justice Not Justice at All? First of all, have you ever heard of Indigenous Justice? Well, it doesn't exist up in Canada, the States, and in Europe, but it sure exists down here. All right, and I'll paraphrase this. It says, Ecuador's Attorney General's office has begun an investigation into the deaths of two men who were beaten and then burned to death last week. Pardon me if I laugh a bit. Because I remember being out in the boonies a couple of times and seeing how furious the indigenous population gets when they catch a thief or an extortionist or rapist. I'll tell you what, that mob mentality really exists. It's something to see, and you don't want to be on the receiving end of it, I'll tell you. Anyway, it goes on to say, the deaths are being called executions by leaders of the Panzelo. They are the indigenous people who make up the majority of Toscasco residents. That's the little town. Then it says they've got an indigenous social media site there that are posting the justification of the deaths, announcing, quote, they were robbers and hitmen who received the fate they deserved under the rules of indigenous justice, unquote. Knowing that, are you fur or agin it? By the way, I don't know if you knew this, but Ecuador and a lot of other Central American and South American countries, those with rather large indigenous populations, their country's constitution recognizes and protects the rights of indigenous people to mete out their own kind of indigenous justice without interference from the authorities or the cops. However, the indigenous justice process must abide by prescribed rules and not include the death penalty. Ha ha. However, every year, in fact, every month, every week, the death penalty is carried out somewhere in Latin America by indigenous people. By the way, when indigenous justice kicks in, it's not as if someone steals something and they cut your hand off. Nope. You have to be a repeat offender unless it's murder or rape. Sounds fair, doesn't it? Anyway, according to Ecuador's prosecutors who are investigating these two deaths, they say the rules were not followed. Torture and executions are not allowed under the five steps of indigenous justice described in the Constitution. The Attorney General said in a press release there were clearly violations. So then who do you punish? The 400 people who took part in the act? Then it says, according to eyewitnesses of the punishment, several national police personnel arrived as the two men were beaten, and they stood by while they were doused with gasoline and burned alive. Accordingly, the cops were quoted as saying, they should have interceded but were afraid that the crowd would turn on them. And according to one of the main indigenous leaders of the group, he said the police were told explicitly not to intervene. Anyway, in the police official report, they said a crowd of about 400 witnessed and participated in the beatings and immolations. According to the police, the rules were not followed. The rules require a process of investigation, reading the charges of the accused, and payment of reparation to the injured parties. And only then was it possible to render physical punishment to the convicted. So then is beating and burning a person cruel and inhumane punishment? Well, that method of execution was practiced by every society since the dawn of man. Oh, and here's a fun fact. During her 5-year reign, England's Queen Mary, you've heard of her, right? The Cunard Line named a cruise ship after her. Anyway, during her 5-year reign, England's Queen Mary had over 300 religious dissenters burned at the stake. And they named a luxury liner after her. In fact, they named two of them, Queen Mary I and Queen Mary II, even though she was into burning people at the stake. And her father, King Henry VIII, burnt 81 people for heresy. And her half-sister, Elizabeth I, executed an estimated 50 people, burned them at the stake, for their wayward religious beliefs, too. Yep, and they call it Jolly Old England. And then there's Hammurabi's Law. Those ancient laws were etched in stone, one of them being an eye for an eye. Now, you longtime listeners heard me say on this show before that many times in Guatemala, you'd read in the paper or even see on the news, 10 o'clock news at night, a group of indigenous people out in the small town boonies punishing some repeated thief or rapist in the town square. But only rarely does the victim die. The townspeople either stone him or beat him with sticks, but they don't actually torture him. That only seems to occur on occasion in South America. By the way, they usually let or force the mother or father to get in the first licks. And sometimes that's enough, because dad's really pissed off. What an embarrassment, huh? Your kid in the town square and the whole town hating you? So it'll be dad who usually beats his kid to a pulp. And generally, if the kid's unrepentant after that, it's round two, and that's when the rest of the town get their licks in. So actually, in all my years in Guatemala, and I keep track of this kind of stuff, it's interesting to me. I recall, I think, only two guys in all those years who didn't get out of their beating alive. And at least in Guatemala, no one ever got the torch. Anyway, it's a hot topic, all right. Pun intended. And it always seems to be first world do-gooders who anguish over things like that. Which brings us to Señor Presidente Bukele in El Salvador, who you probably saw the video this week, or maybe you didn't. He's warded some of the worst of the gangland members in jail now to head to the cemeteries of El Salvador, under guard, of course, with sledgehammers. Their job? To bust the tombstones of all gang members who've died and had gangland symbols etched or painted on their tombstones. Because, you see, that's what they do. They display their gangland affiliations on their tombstones. Sure, it's crass and morbid, I know. But that's how gang members keep a running list of their fallen heroes. And President Bukele laid down the law. There'll be no more of this. No more gangland symbols in El Salvador. Not on the tombstones, not on the graffiti on the walls or buses, in schools or bathrooms. They're just not allowed anymore. In fact, he promised every single gangland symbol will be eliminated from El Salvador by the time he finishes his term. By the way, did you see that video that's been going around this week of those gangsters busting up tombstones? If you didn't, I've got the link. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Meanwhile, get this, every other Latin American country president has praised Bukele's methods that have obviously produced tremendous results. That is, every Latin American country president except two. Colombia's new socialist president, Petro, for one, who said in a press release after seeing President Bukele of El Salvador's video, he said, of those poor, innocent, mega-tattooed prisoners who are now in jail, quote, the terrible photos of the concentration camp in El Salvador full of young people is a disgrace to humanity. So then you might ask, what is Colombia's President Petro's answer to their gang problem? Well, he's got a proposal that the police stop counting crimes altogether and award the equivalent of $200 to young people with criminal records and offer them social forgiveness. What a pus-brained fool. Yeah, right, like Mexico's president, López Obrador. He claims the gang members in Mexico just need more hugs. Remember when he made that idiotic statement about a year ago? So then, how's that working out for you, President Lupi López? So you've got President Bukele of El Salvador using what they call the mano duro, the hard hand or hard fist, locking up all his psychopathic killers. Then you've got Mexico's president offering him hugs, and Colombia's president offering them $200 in social forgiveness. Meanwhile, the other 16 or 17 Latin American countries are holding secret talks with President Bukele's Security Commission, trying to figure out how they can implement the same measures in their own countries. Meanwhile, speaking of Mexican President Lopez's policy of hugs for criminals, I'm sure you've seen the news in the last couple of days that four Americans have been killed in Mexico, with various theories being thrown around, one being they were looking for cheap plastic surgery. Who knows? Apparently, they were in contact with a Mexican plastic surgeon, but they wanted to go cheaper, so they were hunting around for bargains. If that's true, it was just another case of you get what you pay for, right? Just like this show. Though listening to this show may not kill you, you might damage a few brain cells. Anyway, I noticed they posted pictures of these Americans, and one of the guys is a massive Rasta with dreadlocks down to his ass crack pants. Not a good look for a tourist. Talk about stereotyping someone. Apparently, looking at those photos down in Mexico, black lives don't matter much. I wonder if BLM's going to send some people down to picket and loot. I wonder what the local cartels would make of that. Oh, by the way, late breaking news. Two of those Americans survived, though one had a nice big gunshot wound to the leg, but they did survive. Now they've got a few stories to tell the grandkids. By the way, it seems the murder abduction photos and videos are on the internet. In fact, it says here, I'm looking at the article, a video posted to social media Friday showed men with assault rifles and tan body armor loading four people into the bed of a white pickup in broad daylight. One was alive and sitting up, but the others seemed dead or wounded. At least one person appeared to lift his head from the pavement before being dragged to the truck by the perpetrators. Yeah, and you know, according to President Lopez Obrador, all the perpetrators really needed were a few well-placed hugs. Take a guess who in this scenario has shit for brains. Yeah, you know those gang members, they like to post their nasty videos on social media. It's that extreme braggart machoism bleeding through. By the way, there were a few bystander eyewitnesses who asked not to be identified for fear of reprisals. You think? They witnessed the whole thing so the cops got a precise play-by-play. I guess we'll find out sooner or later if it really was a plastic surgery appointment gone bad. Or maybe a drug rendezvous or a pickup or both. But let's just say, judging by the photos, these guys did not look like regular American tourists. You know, khaki shorts, Panama hat, Margaritaville t-shirt. Instead, as one news article put it, these guys look like Haitian drug runners. Though there's yet another theory floating around. Perhaps they really did find a cut-rate plastic surgeon who told them to bring cash. And he let a few of his narco buddies, or maybe he had to let his narco buddies know about it. We'll find out. All right, changing themes a little bit. You know, that's what they say in Spanish when they're going to change the subject. They say, cambio la tema, the theme. You longtime listeners know how I often talk about stem cell treatments here in Latin America, outside the States, of course, because up in the States, it's illegal to take stem cells and multiply them. In other words, take a small quantity of stem cells, like 100,000, and multiply them so much that you get millions. Not just a few million either. Let's say 100, 200, 300 million stem cells. That's what they do down here in Latin America. Whereas up in the States, if you get stem cells and they take them from your bone marrow or some other imminently painful location, they just separate them out, purify them, and re-inject them into you. Doesn't quite sound logical, does it? Because they were in you in the first place. They were your stem cells. They're just relocating them to another part of your body. Anyway, that's the reason why so many people elect to come down here to Latin America and get their stem cells done, because they can get 100, 200, even 300 million stem cells injected at one time. And of course, the reason why it's not allowed up in the States is because heart and joint surgeries make up 30 to 40% of a hospital's business. But you knew that already, right? So then why am I bringing this up again? Because an article just came out in, guess where, a mainstream rag, USA Today. A headline article about stem cells that says, and I'll paraphrase this here, researchers who have tried for decades to use stem cells to restore damaged hearts, that is using small quantities of stem cells, we're talking about the US now, remember? Well, it turns out there's a trial that's been done by the Texas Heart Institute showing that one-time treatment of stem cells did not keep heart failure patients out of the hospital, but dramatically reduced the risk of stroke and recurrent heart attack for the nearly 3 years it took to complete the study. Again, we're talking about a very small quantity of stem cells injected into each person. I repeat, in a three-year study from the Texas Heart Institute, stem cells dramatically reduced the risk of stroke or recurrent heart attack for the nearly 3 years of the study, particularly among people who also had high levels of inflammation. Then we've got a quote. He says, at a year, the hearts were pumping stronger, said Dr. Emerson Perrin, who led the study. In fact, he said he was quite surprised at the results. He says also, quote, I now have the recipe. I know who I have to give these stem cells to, how to give them, and in what dose. Now, I'm reading this to you today because mainstream medicine does not like to admit these things. But somehow, all the sports medicine doctors in the States know about this, because when I go to the stem cell clinics here in Latin America, I always see some professional football, baseball, or soccer players in the waiting room. How's that possible? In fact, one time in the DR, I saw a whole team of soccer players in the waiting room. Why, you might ask, would professional teams up in the States send their players down here to get stem cell treatments? Because they don't want to lose a valuable player for 6 months or a year due to a surgery when they could get tuned up in weeks with stem cell therapy. Until now, you'd never hear first world mainstream doctors tell you that. Except now it's impossible to hide the results of the studies. So what this latest Texas study show? Well, I'll read the highlights. It says, in the study of 565 heart failure patients from 52 different treatment centers, half were given high doses of mesenchymal stem cells. Those are from a newborn's placenta and umbilical cord. And the other half, placebo injections. The study was designed to measure hospitalization and time until death, neither of which were statistically improved by the treatment, but those who received the stem cells had 58% reduced risk of heart attack or stroke. And among the patients with high level of inflammation, the risk reduction rose to 75%. Then it says these patients were already heavily treated with medications, so the improvements of the stem cells came on top of those therapies. Dr. Perrin also said, quote, for years, I've been seeing patients with heart failure get better when given mesenchymal stem cells. And until now, he said, we didn't have the studies to know why or the controlled test to have the data to tabulate it. He said, up till now in the U.S., stem cell therapy has been this black hole. But now we have insights as to how it works. And they do work. The article then goes on to ask the question, stem cells are effective, but are they safe? Yes, it says the new study showed the treatment is safe. None of the patients in this trial or in others over the years have suffered any serious problems after receiving stem cells for heart disease. Then it says other doctors questioned, like Dr. Joshua Hare, a cardiologist at the University of Miami. He says the stem cell field would have moved much faster had it been better funded. But up till now, research money has not been forthcoming. How about that? Big pharma, big hospital conflict of interest there, maybe? And here's the kicker that proves the point. Mesoblast is an Australian company that funded the trial. Isn't it funny that U.S. companies are not quite willing to do so? They had to get the research grant from an Australian company. That asswipe Falsies, National Institute for Health, NIH, you've heard of it. The main research funding arm of the U.S. government is controlled completely by Dr. Falsie. Are you getting this? All right, moving on. You want to hear a really cheeky email I just got? Wow. He's got so many good points that nobody's brought up before. Now, pay attention. This one's unusually good. A little bit rough and awful on PC, too. This is from Ruben, and the title of this greet is Being Labeled Latinx. No thanks. He starts, Dear Johnny, you have had listeners, Latino listeners, write in about skin color and cultural comments they get on occasion. I'm talking about Latinos living in the States. Seems you have a pretty good contingent of Latino listeners, not just Caucasian gringos who want to get the hell out of Dodge. Just to let you know, Johnny, you've got Latinos like me listening too. He says, as for me, a 40-something seventh generation American Hispanic with a light complexion living in the States. So naturally, since I look like a certain race of people, people stereotype me a lot. You get used to it. It's normal. I get comments from both sides. Been getting comments since I was a little kid. I'm not talking about insults here, none of that. I'm just talking about stereotypical comments. But you don't hear me whining about it. I have more things to worry about. My family's been in the USA longer than 90% of all the white folks here. And I'll tell you, all that ultra-sensitive woke stuff just means people have way too much time on their hands. Or as some smart white guy once said, God must really love stupid people because he made so many of them. Though maybe 10 years ago, I never would have believed that wokeness would have spread to Latinos. Latinos living anywhere, down in Latin America or here in the States. In the beginning, the early days, I always thought the woke sickness was strictly for whites, blacks, and Native Americans. Mostly of college age. Though I still don't get that Native American thing. They came over here on the Bering Strait land bridge from Asia. So there's nothing native about them. But man, if you want to get canceled in a New York minute, just bring up that in an open conversation. Then he says, we people of Spanish, Inca, Aztec, Toltec, and Maya blood somehow went from being Spanish to Hispanic to Latino to Latinx, and now this ridiculous thing called Latin, L-A-T-I-N-E. I personally would love nothing more than to go on an expletive-laden rant on how ridiculous and absurd the above name changes are, but unfortunately, it won't do any good. There are just too many second- and third-generation woke Latinos in the States, in the university system, perpetuating that bullshit. I fear we've not heard the end of it. It's just the beginning. As you stated many times on your show, Johnny, non-college-aged Hispanics in the States hate the term Latinx. And just lately, the newer, even stupider term, Latin, spelled L-A-T-I-N-E. By the way, funny how if you had a few tequilas, it sounds like latrine. Latin, latrine. Me, Johnny, here. Sounds like a French Moulin Rouge dancer. Latin, latrine. Then he says, living in the U.S. all my life, as I have, and my seven generations of family members, don't even try to use Latinx or Latin around any of us. Case in point, I was at a party and watched an educated Latina go off on a do-gooder NGO gringa from a church group using her California wokeisms peppered with Latinx references on that 40-something Latina in question. It was hilarious to see how she lowered the boom on the hapless gringa. She never knew what hit her. I repeat, we Latinos over 30 hate those terms. I'd like to find the woke idiot Latin studies college professor who came up with those terms in the first place. Certainly, I suspect it was a gender-fluid, a-hole white guy or an LGBTQ Latino's idea. Johnny, I have no idea who Latin or Latinx people are. The whole thing's confusing as hell. And as far as it goes, doesn't there have to be an actual language associated with a legitimate race? Basically, no one in the world speaks a language called Latinx or Latin. And if there is such a thing, we don't know about it yet. I wouldn't doubt the libtard colleges are probably inventing a whole language to go along with it. I bet right now as we speak, there are vast new departments and bureaucracies devoted strictly to creating a new Latin and Latinx language. Wouldn't surprise me a bit if that was in the works. And Johnny, about being stereotyped by looks, I get it all the time. Get over it. That's what humans have done since we were tribal and hurled spears at each other. So what if you don't look like Justin Bieber or a white-bread CNN talking head from Nebraska? Get over it. But unfortunately, the perpetually offended wimps with shit auto-esteem will never stop searching for ways to be offended. He says, as for me, if I wasn't Latino-looking myself, I'd have been canceled years ago for calling my idiot, tattooed, low-rider compañeros cabrones to their faces. No doubt us Latinos have stereotyped ourselves, all right. And Hollywood perpetuates the tradition. So what? I'm an educated guy with a master's degree. I'm no cabrón. But I sure know one when I see one. Then he says, as a reality check, Johnny, ask any old Italian, Pole, German, or Irish about being stereotyped. They got through it all without the whining and crying. Though you have to admit, they did something quite revolutionary. It took a generation or two, but they just assimilated. Now, there is a multiple syllabic word for you. Assimilate. How's that for a novel concept? You move to a new country and actually learn their customs and language instead of clinging to your old ways. I know there will always be people who say you shouldn't ditch your old customs. Well, obviously, your old ways didn't work out very well for you, or you wouldn't have ditched everything to come to the United States. Yet, people come here to picket and protest, enforcing your new country, the country that welcomed and permitted you to come in, by the way, to change their books and street signs to your language because you don't want to learn English. Let's see, Johnny, a little history lesson here. Did the Italians, the Polish, or the Germans petition to have the street signs and the books in the schools in America to have it all printed in their language, too? Nope. The older, more appreciative immigrants, the ones that came way before the present diaspora, i.e. before welfare handouts existed, they forced themselves to learn English. They even went to night school, and they insisted their kids learn it too. Jeez Louise, what a bunch of ass-kissers and brown-nosers those 19th and 20th century immigrants were, huh? Forcing their poor kids to assimilate and learn English. In today's world, they'd call it child abuse. Tell you what really makes me laugh, though, Johnny. It always makes me laugh when second or third or even fourth generation Mexicans or Central Americans who don't speak Spanish, when they get all offended and huffy when people they meet assume they do speak Spanish. I've known many people who've had the Honduran, Guatemala, Panama, or Mexican flags waving in their front yard, wearing their country's colors or pin on the lapel, rooting for their World Cup teams like crazy, etc. Closing off the neighborhood street and having a huge party when their home country is in the World Cup finals. but yet they don't know Spanish. I'm thinking, if you're so damn proud of where your family came from that you wave the flag like you're still living there, then why didn't you bother to learn your mother or grandmother's language? That makes no sense. He says, my next door neighbor's German, or his grandparents were. He doesn't fly a German flag or root for the German World Cup team or hang out at the German bakery and eat strudel every day for breakfast. Nor does he even have a single German needlepoint saying hanging on the wall in the bathroom or the kitchen. In fact, I never would have even known he was German, except the fact that once I commented he was very prone to sunburn, turns red in about 20 minutes. And he said to me, everyone in his family has the white, pale German skin, easily sunburned. That was my only clue. In the end, it's sad that new immigrants just won't assimilate like the old-timers did. It would make life a hell of a lot easier for both sides and for everyone if they did, but they won't. So I don't blame white-bred Americans for wanting to get the hell out of Dodge. Working on a plan B myself. Problem is, I don't speak Spanish. I took French in high school. Signed, Ruben, a seventh-generation Latino-looking American who doesn't give a shit about stereotypes. Well, Ruben, thanks for that. You covered a lot of ground there. Just one comment about that Latinx and Latin thing. That Latin thing is a new one on me. And the fact that you're telling me the over 30 Latino crowd are not warming up to those terms at all. In fact, as you say, the educated ones are pretty irritated about it. Well, in a way, I'm glad to hear that. Funny thing, though, down here, doesn't matter who you talk to, I'm talking about Latin America now. When the gringo do-gooders and wokesters throw those terms around, Latinos down here don't get mad. The fact is, they just don't get it. And if someone tries to explain it to them, their eyes just glaze over in disbelief. They don't get mad, they just think it's totally ridiculous. It kind of reminds me some years back, maybe 15 years ago, when I first started seeing separate trash cans for paper, glass, aluminum, and plastic. That was, by the way, on the island of Roatan, Honduras. I saw those little refuse stations here and there, and they had little signs on them saying, keep Roatan clean, donated by this or that NGO or do-gooder group. Then one day I was walking on the other side of the island near the garbage dump, and I saw the garbage trucks unloading those things into the landfill. They all went into the same hole. You get it? It was just a feel-good exercise for the benefit of first-world tourists. And I'm sure the NGOs that funded those things didn't even know what the guys at the dump were doing.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.